Hey everybody, Jamie Kelly here. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Season 3 of the Approximate Podcast. Be sure to join our Patreon for only $5 a month to see all of Season 3's episodes in full HD video. That's patreon.com/approximatepodcast. If you're already a patron, thank you so much for your support. And to everyone who's tuned in, we love you all. And now, on with the show. Kitty! Fucking stop it! God damn it. Fucking cat. Yeah, you. Oi. Scrapple. Stop it. All right, cut. We're done. Fucking cat. God damn it. Nikki Sequoia, how are you doing, sweetheart?
Pretty good. Tired but good.
Tired but good.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I almost feel like we've wasted an entire podcast episode on the previous hour that we've been hanging out like champions.
We've been talking for like an hour and a half and then finally sat over here.
All kinds of things. Out of all the guests that we've had, I've been waiting to get you on. I feel like within our industry, and folks that have been listening to the episodes, like they get it. Finding diamonds in the rough in this weird, like, specious fucking industry, it's far and few in between.
Yeah.
And outside of my press agent and just all around good friend in person, Crystal, I have been chomping at the bit to get you on, because from my point of view, when I think of Nikki Sequoia, I think of somebody that has their heart in the right place.
100%.
Somebody that has their head in the right place and is doing the very best they can. And I'm so glad that you could be here.
I'm happy to be here. I honestly don't normally do podcasts. I don't listen to them. I've never been on one. And when I knew that you wanted to have me on, I was like, you know what? Jamie's probably the only person I would like to talk to for an hour.
Oh, thank you so much. That's amazing.
So I'm sitting in your chair backwards.
It doesn't surprise me.
But has anybody sat in the chair like this yet?
No, because nobody's ever been that fucking cool. You're the coolest person I have ever fucking known. Look at you.
I almost brought sunglasses just like yours, too. I almost did.
I almost don't know where to start because, like, I'm so comfortable with you that I feel like there's, like, a bevy of, like, different points we can start. Like,
and we don't need icebreakers.
It's an embarrassment of riches, you know? I almost have, like, choice paralysis. So let's start it simple, and then we'll work our way.
Sounds good.
Yeah, for the listening audience who don't know you. Like, we know each other well. How did you get your start in the industry? And we can start as, like, low and as granular as you want to go. Like, what wasn't even, like, what gave you the sniff?
Yeah, let's go all the way to the beginning. So I did retail management for almost 8 years. And then I was a manager at Michael's Arts and Crafts. And there was this really beautiful woman that came in at least, like, every other week and bought, like, 500 foam stars.
Let me ask you this. How long ago was this?
This was 2012.
Okay, so a good 9 years.
That's 11 years now.
It's
2023,
Jamie. I'm very bad at math.
But yeah, that was over a decade ago, and I managed the frame shop at the Michael's Arts and Crafts.
Whoa, wait a minute. I took a Joe job for like a good 6 months at Michael's, and they put me in the frame.
In the framing center?
They put me in the framing center.
It's so much fun. Like, cutting glass is way more fun than you would expect it to be.
It surprised me when I went in there and they like had the top tier guys that they just put on glass. I was like, how are you not breaking that? Am I ever going to be allowed to do that?
And then when there's pieces left over, you get to break them into the trash.
Yeah.
But I worked out in Scottsdale, Arizona at the time, so we got so much high value art that we got to frame. Like, I got to touch some art that is probably worth more than I'll ever own.
So not just the prints that you guys sold, but like people would bring stuff in.
Yeah, it was a custom frame shop.
Yeah,
so it was everything that they wanted to bring, from family portraits to, you know, something they bought off an art auction for a couple million dollars, and it was crazy. And we got entrusted to to frame that. But yes, there was this lady. And so when you custom order at Michael's, you have to go back to the custom frame shop because that's where they have the computer to be able to order stuff.
Sure.
So she was ordering these foam stars. Like, they're like kids foam stars, but like she was ordering them like 500 a piece every 2 weeks.
Wow.
And there was like, there was a moment after probably like 2 or 3 months of this where I asked her, I'm like, what are these for? I assume she was a teacher or something of that. And she said, I sell them to my fans on the internet. And I was like, elaborate, please. Because, you know, here I'm making $8.75 an hour as a manager. I'm like, elaborate further. I want to sell foam starts.
Wow, yes.
And so she kind of, she just barely went over it. You could tell she was a little apprehensive to say something to me. But, you know, she kind of explained that she was a cam model and that, you know, her fans paid, you know, $20 or whatever to get their name on a foam star to put on her wall at home. And so she showed me a picture of this wall, and it was like probably a wall like big as the one behind me right now. And it was just full of foam stars. And so I'm like thinking in my head, I'm like, every single one of those is $20. And she's coming here and buying a pack of 500 for like $6.
Wow.
And so that night, actually, I went home and I looked up Cam Girl. This was in 2012. So still fairly new. The internet's only been around, what, 10 years at that point?
It wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now.
Yeah. And so I did some research. I signed up for some sites as a customer and tipped some models and saw what they did for that money and decided that I wanted to try. At the time, it was scary because there wasn't bigger models on the internet yet.
Sure.
Body positivity wasn't a thing. And I mean, it was a thing, but it wasn't as accepted to be a fat model.
Right.
And especially a fat naked model, a fat porn model.
Fair.
So I went ahead and signed up for the site that I felt that I liked the best out of all the sites that I went ahead and was a customer on. I made sure to be a customer on all the sites first. It was at the time it was Chatterbait and MyFreeCams, StreamMate, and a site called Naked.com, which was owned by Bang Bros.
Did you, for just a second, let me interrupt. Did you do clips for sale? Was that a...
I had no idea about all of that yet. I just learned about camming, so... Okay. After I was a customer on all of those, I figured out which one I liked best as a customer. And I went off based off that instead of how they treated their models or how the inner workings of that, I went on to the one I liked best as a customer. And, so I signed up for naked.com, which was owned by Bang Bros at the time. I think it's owned by Flirt for Free now, but, I hopped on that and, that site was a little different because it was dollars instead of coins or tokens, which are like 5 cents.
Yeah.
So every time they tipped a gold, it was a dollar. And I liked that more so than having to do math in the middle of being naked.
Exactly, yeah.
And I hopped on there, and my first night, I think I made like $700-something, just being a thick girl that could shake her butt and big titties. And I was different than every model on that site because every model on that site was skinny, very typical model-esque makeup, hair done, sure. Nails. I logged on with no makeup, pimples on my face, curly, wild hair that was unkempt, and just shook my ass. And for some reason, everybody was like, holy shit, this fat girl's really hot.
I gotta, like, immediately, I'm feeling, like, so connected with you because even though the circumstances are completely different and even though the details are completely different, I can imagine, and I want you to speak to this if you can, see if it's even a relatable point, but when that happened, did it completely change your view about what it was to, like, make money? And did you feel like some weird new door was opened up? And that
it was more so my body type, my confidence that opened up, because I had multiple different kinds of jobs, and well, yes, I did feel a door open up, you know, making $700 in one night. That's what I was making in 2 weeks at that point.
Yeah,
it opened up a door. But what really hit me was how beautiful I am. Because up until that point, I never saw myself in that light. I never saw myself as sexy or sexual other than, you know, the occasional fling with a guy here and there.
And so I'm guessing maybe, quote unquote, all of a sudden, I do get to have that part of me.
Yes.
There are people that actually do appreciate.
Yes, and that absolutely blew me away because I did not expect that. I expected a couple bucks here and there. I expected to, you know, go to work, come home, cam, make, you know, a couple bucks here and there that I can go spend on a concert or that kind of thing. And I made a 2-week paycheck in one night, and it took 2 weeks of doing that and for me to quit my job.
Have you had a quote unquote day job or lived on the grid since then?
No, I've only gotten a job for fun a couple times that didn't last very long because I made a name for myself in the industry. And so it does not take long for people to find me and treat me differently in a work environment.
I see.
I think I got a job at Petco for a little bit. It's like 6 months, and they hired me as a manager because I had experience. I had managed PetSmarts for a really long time.
Yeah.
And it took like 2-3 weeks before somebody came across me on Pornhub and or Campsite or wherever they found me, because at that point I was already doing clips and stuff like that.
And who brought it up? Was it like your higher ups, or was it like customers?
Customers have never brought it up to me, but it was the higher ups, and they started treating me differently. They never really like brought it to my attention, but I knew because they treated me differently enough that I knew what happened.
It means they've been looking.
That's my favorite thing is when people say, you know, I saw you on Pornhub, and I said, what category did you look up? Because I've got fart. I've got feet. Were you looking up fart stuff? Because
you're about to judge me and affect my career. But you're the one looking.
Yeah, you found me.
Son of a bitch! How unfair is the world?
It's so unfair. So at least I left that one on my terms because they didn't treat me right. And then I had a little small stint at a little ice cream shop, and one lady owned it, and she knew what I did, but I worked during the day because everybody else that worked there couldn't work during the day because of school. Right. So I did that for a little bit, and, you know, I would get 3-4 customers in my shift, so I would just go in and make the ice cream, or it was Italian ice, shaved ice.
Mm. Gelato?
Yeah, I was like, Rita's Italian ice.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah, gelato. Yeah, gelato, and there's gelatis and, you know, a bunch of ice cream stuff. And so I would go in and make the ice and stuff in the morning, and by the time customers came in, I was off the clock. So I enjoyed that one because that was just for the hell of it. And it was mainly because I was trying to just save a little extra money for fun stuff. I wanted to travel and do things like that. But no, other than for fun, I have been off the grid for civvy jobs for the past decade.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
I kudos to that. This is going to sound weird, and there's like a whole deep dive into what I'm about to say. We can totally unpack this, but just as like punchline only, anybody that can find themselves in a position where they can take advantage of being outside of the system, break the rules a little bit this way, a little bit that way, sociological rules, money rules, if you can fucking please break the rules. If you can take advantage of breaking the rules, please take advantage of breaking the rules.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, after being so long working with men being above me, and, you know, there was a long time in my retail career that I could have gone higher and into corporate positions, and they were taken by men or sabotaged by men. And, you know, not all men are bad, but those ones were. Yeah. And it was frustrating. So being able to control how I ran my business was definitely freeing in so many ways.
A majority of that time was taken up being a, what we'll just very simply call a performer.
Yes.
So I want to segue from being a performer, and let's get granular about switching from performer into being what I know you as, and that is a producer, a person that makes things happen for other people, for companies, for clients, of a whole bevy of, like, it's just a rainbow of people that you work for making things happen. When did that start?
So I would attribute the beginning of ManyVids to that, because ManyVids allowed me to, I didn't know about Clips for Sale yet. You know, Clips for Sale had been around a while, but when ManyVids came out, it was really popular on Twitter and they were recruiting models and things like that. And that's kind of when I realized that I can create videos. And I enjoyed that a lot more than being live. I still loved my live performances, but I had creativity in me that I couldn't get out in my live shows. And so when I realized that, I started creating more and more outrageous videos, because at the time, there wasn't a lot of the things you see today weren't out yet. People weren't color grading. People weren't shooting with anything more than their Logitech 520 or whatever it was they had at the time. And so once I realized that I could create things and use editing software and do things like making people appear and doing things like giantess, make it seem like the cameras are really small, things like that. That's when I really got into that. And from there is kind of where I aspired to do that for other people as well. And so I just kind of kept my head down and worked on it for a long time, got really good at doing my own stuff, and then pandemic hit. And then after that is when Penny approached me and we started working on Roommates together. So
before, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. Penny is in this industry as of the time of this recording. Penny Petals is a producer that has worked for a bevy of different companies, another producer. Director, producer, somebody that has gained a, just like I know everybody. Penny knows everybody. You know everybody. Yep. Somebody that's inundated in the industry. So that's when we talk about Penny, that's who we're talking about. A director, a producer and a director.
Yes. And at that time is kind of just when I realized that I really enjoyed doing that for other people. So I wanted to continue doing so. And that's what brought me here today.
Did you make a conscientious effort into like learning about how to produce? Did you do investigations into like the kind of cameras you need or lenses or light or?
To be honest, not really.
Not really.
When I was doing my own stuff, I just kind of used whatever lights I had available, because I've always been on a budget girl, and you know, I don't look too far into what I can acquire. I work more with what do I already have? What can I make happen with what I have in front of me? So at the time, I, you know, use whatever. And to be honest, I still film with my iPhone. All of those nominated scenes you've seen me do have been shot on my iPhone. Use my iPhone for most things. I have some good cameras that I use when the time calls. But I pretty much just took inspiration from others into what kind of lighting they use, things like that. Your forte, which is audio, is my absolute least favorite. And
this is why I get paid the medium bucks.
Right?
Because
right?
I'll put up with it.
Yeah, I hate audio so much. You saw me with my dog clicker the other day. You see, I work with what I have. And
I gotta, just for people, like, you say dog clicker, nobody knows what you're talking about. Oh. Let me just like put it out there real quick, just for shits and giggles. In production, as you're taking video and you're running good sound, which is usually an outside source, you got to find a way to sync them up.
Yep.
And usually that's what those Hollywood clapboards are for. They make a big clap. And then in post-production, you take waveforms. You take the waveform from the shitty audio from a camera and the good video from the good mic recorded on an outside source, and you sync them up in post-production by just like finding where that click is. You match up the click, and then you can just mute the video audio and then be left with nothing more than the good audio.
Yep.
And then there you have it. So you're saying you had to take a dog clicker because you didn't have a PA to do a clapboard. So instead, what you did was you took a dog clicker, and at the camera, you went,
yep,
real quick, so you could run back and hit record.
And it gave me the same audio wavelength that I was able to.
Yeah.
Actually, Adobe just auto does it now, so I don't have to worry about that.
But. Oh, yeah. We have it really good these days.
Yeah.
You don't need, honestly, no, I don't recommend this, but for people that are watching that are on the nerdier side of things and they're, you know, investigating production, whether it's for, you know, for your own auspices or because you want to work for other people or whatever it is, we have it so good these days, you don't even necessarily need to match up a click. But please do.
Yeah.
Please do.
Having the click definitely helps Adobe notice where it is, but double check.
Yeah. And you never know where your stuff that you recorded, you never know whose hands it's going to wind up in down the production line. You know, it gets very chaotic, especially when you take on more clients. You could be dealing with people that handle your footage like 2 and 3 iterations down the line.
Oh, yeah.
And they may not be as loosey-goosey as you think, because we kind of already know what it is. But somebody may be stringent to the rules and like, where's the fucking click?
Yep.
You know? So please always click.
I always click anyway, because it doesn't always grab it. So, you know, you just got to have those backups, just like you do with all your podcast stuff, and have all your backups.
Yeah, just behind the scenes. I'm glad you brought that up. We never let this in. We never let this like behind the scenes stuff come in. But even now, even like I have a really simple production workflow for this podcast, I still do the clap and 10 seconds of silence so I can studiously sync up things, even though I pretty much don't need it. And I take 10 seconds of silence out, which captures what we call room noise, right? And then in post-production, we're getting really nerdy here.
Yep.
But for kids that are watching, they might need to know this without having to look up a YouTube tutorial. You take a sample of your room noise, and then in your audio workstation, your digital audio workstation, there are many different plugins that can mathematically subtract that 10 seconds of hum and make your recordings essentially sound pristine, as if there was never an air conditioner on.
Yep.
Or the window wasn't open, you know? So like even, I don't even need to do that according to the kind of gear that I have here, because it's all set up to mitigate that. I still do it. Best practices.
I do it because I shoot with the air conditioner on, because this is Vegas. Also, as a BBW model, I know we get hot and we are not going to perform well if we do not have that AC on. So I always room noise it, so that way I can make sure that we keep the AC on throughout the summer for shoots. Because
Now, do you find when you subtract that noise, do you find that it does like a weird little thing?
No, I have come across that if I try to take it out too much, but you've been at my house. My AC is very quiet, so I actually don't have to add too much noise reduction on it.
You're running pretty professional mics, and you know where to put the mics, and that makes all the difference in the world. Because if you take that room noise that you're meant to subtract in post, if it's egregious room noise and you do the subtraction in post, it not only takes away the room noise, but it takes away very like important frequencies in the dialogue and the, you know, performers' noises that you're hearing.
Yep. And that's because where you start getting echoes and things like that.
Because taking away room noise is essentially taking away what we call white noise, is essentially the main factor. And all white noises, I'm getting super nerdy here.
But you're almost past my knowledge level here.
What white noise is it's all frequencies dispersed all at once. And that's usually what egregious air and, like, you know, air conditioning sounds like. You got to be really careful about the mics you choose, where they're placed, so that when you do remove that 10 seconds of white noise, it doesn't kill the human element, which takes place between, oh, I'd say about anywhere from 150K in the spectrum. I'm getting way nerdy here. To around 5K. You just got to be really careful about it.
Well, and that's even more important nowadays when we have so much content created by AI, that we need to make sure that we are still human for our viewers. Because there's going to be a point where the reason they come to us is because we're human.
I feel like it's getting to that point as well.
Yep.
And I think, like, we're all spooked about AI. Creatives are all spooked about AI. I try to not look at it. I try to not look at it because there is so much hype. I know that when people, like, the powers that be talk about AI, it's a lot of fear-mongering.
Very much.
To, like, it just like kind of plays in social media where, like, if you're a creative, like, these folks know what they're doing. We're going to spook you about AI so that you keep looking at the thing we're talking about AI so that you can see the next soap commercial.
Yes.
And like, I got to like tune myself out of that like social media conversation.
I also have because, you know, it's coming whether we like it or not. But if I continue to do a good job and make sure that everybody is human and it's very relatable, then I don't feel like AI can replace human. This goes all the way back to when I was camming. There's just no way to replace that human connection that other people crave.
Because everything that's said about AI is essentially surface-level bullshit.
Yeah.
It's creating graphics. Even at the lowest level of the entertainment ladder, you know, porn, essentially.
Yes.
You can't fuck off the human element.
No, not at all.
That's what it is. That's what it is. It's transference of information. It's human beings transferring information in the way that is like the most meaningful to them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it's just like a simple jerk off and a guy comes after 13 seconds worth of a single shot that's held for 13 seconds so they can get the fuck off, or whether you see such a performance with such dialogue and such lighting and such cinematography that makes you want to call your mother. It's all essentially the same. And AI has nothing to do with that conversation.
Nope.
Didn't I do a thing that looked cool? Well, yeah, I guess.
I know there's going to be really neat ways for us to use AI in the future, such as creating scenarios that we've never come up with. You know, let's refresh the porn tropes. What does ChatGPT have to say about that? Little things like that.
I want to speak to this because I was almost tempted. It was about a week ago, for the sake of storytelling. It was about a week ago that I thought, I've been wanting to come up with this idea of taking all of my acumen and all of my resources that I currently enjoy but hardly ever utilize and make a movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in everybody's hearts to like speak, you know? And if you're in such a position where you have resources and you like have the gumption and the heart to do it, even for people in my position that literally make their living off of making stuff, I still have that thing in myself where I'm like, I would like to do something kind of aggrandized, like make a movie.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, well, what is holding me back from that? And of course it's, well, you got to start from the bottom. Do you have a story to tell? You know, and that comes from living a life and then just taking a chance,
mm-hmm.
telling a good story and then taking all of your wherewithal and all of your resources and all of your connections and asking favors to make a thing. It's a very scary thing.
Very
scary.
It takes
money. It takes all the time in the world. So I thought, well, what if I used, and I'm not going to do this, but I did think for a second about a week ago, according to the story I'm telling, what if I said, well, AI, I want a 3-part act. I want it to be a 90-page script. I want it to be about, oh, what did they tell you? Talk about what you know. I know about being in porn. I know about being a musician. So I'd pick one of those two things. And then I'd probably put in something like, well, make it like Wes Anderson-like, or make it P.T. Anderson, or make it, Spielberg.
That's exactly what you can do with it.
And then have it all come in, and then I chip away at that end result. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. It seems like it takes care of a lot of the heavy pragmatic lifting. But at the end of the day, you're having something false that is literally its whole job is to pull from other people
mm-hmm.
in a way that is, it doesn't tend to the feeling of influence. It just tends to exactly what you put in and it becomes too numeric. And even if you were to take that script that it would feed back to you and you said, okay, well, now I'm going to chip it away. I'm going to take away the rough edges and literally use this. It's still not honest.
It's not honest. And probably at the end of it, you probably wouldn't feel as proud as you would if you did it all.
There would be some false thing about it that even if it appealed to people, even if people liked the end result, yeah, imagining everything forward went perfectly, and you got an audience to respond to it, and it there would still be that thing in you that felt
as a true false. Creative, there would be a hole in your heart.
There would,
yeah,
there would. You never got to see a chance of what you were able to actually do on your own merits.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that's a very important thing to recognize. There's room for merit. There's room for you being the person that you are and perfectly, amazingly failing rather than getting scared and letting a robot try to mitigate failure.
I wouldn't be here today if I didn't allow myself to fail.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
That's the hardest thing for some people to realize is you have to fail in order to learn.
The greatest successes I've ever known literally sprung from immediate failure. It really is that way. And there's going to be times as a creative person, you know, I know our audience. I know who's looking. Failure hurts, and it can last a long time. And if you're the kind of person that just has a little bit of bravery in yourself to fail, you can fail and feel how much that hurts for a long time before you do the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so long as you do the next thing, all that 2, 3, 4 years of failure, that sounds really specific as I'm telling the story. I'm just saying if it's egregious, if it's taking up big portions of your life, that sense of failure – so long as you get on the horse again.
Yeah.
And you keep doing it. You know, I hear this from all my creative heroes. It's always the same story.
Mm-hmm.
It's just make something and don't think that the first thing that you're going to make is going to define you. Make something that is absolutely going to fail and your heart's going to break because you're putting all of yourself into it. Let it fail. Let it fail. Please let it fail.
10% of what you create will always be in the bottom 10% of what you created.
Absolutely correct.
I often think of that if I, you know, have a scene that goes wrong or something like that. And you know what? There's a bottom 10% of everything I've created, and it'll always be there. There's always going to be that bottom 10%. And whether or not things flip-flop in and out of that 10%, then so be it. But there's always going to be a bottom 10% of things you've created.
Because we only have an hour to kill. You get to find me flip the script a little bit.
So I've probably been talking for another 4 hours at this point.
Well, if I stand up and look at the timer, we're at 36 minutes.
Did you hit a button while you're over there? I want a fun button.
You want a fun button?
I want a fun button.
Dude, say something cool.
Cool. I don't know.
No. Say something really cool.
We should have hit it after I said the...
No. Tell me about what it is to be a partier.
I don't party for shit.
You don't have a favorite drink?
Okay, I got a favorite drink. It's called a cum shot. We needed at least...
You're the worst.
You're not sitting over there today, so we needed at least one button in this episode. You showed it to me. You can't show it to me and not give me at least one button.
From today on, I'm going to make it a point to bring up the cum shot, and I'm going to follow it by... cum shot.
And it's actually just a mix of Fireball and rum chata.
Oh, what is rum chata?
I don't know. It's like a cinnamon.
You know what? I'm glad you don't know because it means you're not an alky.
Yeah, no, I don't drink. I don't party. I just every once in a while. Well, actually, when I did shoot a little bit of mainstream porn, I got most of my partying back before the internet, and nobody's ever going to know about that. But outside of that, I got a little bit of partying in when I used to shoot mainstream porn. We would do, you know, our scenes, and then the producer or whatever would take us out to the club after. It was not my scene, but, you know, it was always fun to order a shot called the cum shot. A lot of people would call it the Cinnamon Toast Crunch shot. It's going to have to be, whether it's talking about the drink or the act.
I want to know about a little more about where you are today as a producer. So we're going to get into brass tacks. Who are the companies you're working for? As of the time of this recording,
mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
So My main project is I, alongside with Keith Eros, we own Transnificent.com. Alongside with Gruby. Gruby owns a portion of that for hosting and stuff like that. But we run that site, and it is one of very few trans masculine porn sites. And in this particular site, we focus on letting people work with the genders that they're comfortable with. We allow people to create scenes that they want to shoot. And I actually also buy content from some people overseas, so that way they can also participate in a way that they normally wouldn't be able to, because it's not just America that trans men are. They're everywhere, and they deserve to be seen. So we are running that. And also for Gruby, I shoot for all of their sites. So I shoot for Femme Out, I shoot for Gruby Girls, Black Tea Girls, all the other side sites that they have on top of that. And I also shoot for BBW Adventures. It's actually BBWXXXAdventures.com.
Which has nothing to do with Gruby. It's a separate deal, right?
That is a separate deal. That is actually not even in the trans side of porn. It's over on the cis side of porn. And it is bigger models, and they have adventures and get fucked.
I'm going to, just because I'm curious, now I'm in the listener's position. I got questions. How has that been for you? Are you like a big player in that, or?
I was a model in that category for quite some time, and still my little bit of modeling that I do also still fits in that category.
Well, I mean specifically as a producer, like, do you like do a lot of work for the BBW scene, and is this site or company, like, is it a big part of that pie as far as that niche goes?
As far as that niche goes, there's a lot of little companies, but there's only a handful of bigger companies that do BBW stuff, and then, you know, the occasional mainstream companies that allow a BBW here and there, like, you know, we know what companies those are. BBW Adventures is a bigger player in. They're still new. We're still only, you know, a year or two old, and but they are a big player, have been and will be nominated for things in the future, and definitely sponsors a lot of BBW events, such as like yacht parties and strip shows at Exoticas and things like that. So they are a big player and hopefully continue to grow.
Have you been, like, nominated for anything? Has that been a thing that's come up? Have you been recognized for your work?
Not on the cis side yet, because I've only been shooting with the BBW Adventure since January. So I'm hoping to get some nominations in the next award season. I have quite a few scenes that I'm going to put up for nominations, because I'm very proud of them. And I hope to be nominated in, like, niche director for that, on top of shooting trans stuff. So trans stuff and BBWs are both niche categories. So I hope to be nominated in that, because that's kind of how I've seen myself my whole life, is niche. I hope to make some headway in there in the next award season. So that way I can, one, feel a little more seen. I feel sometimes that being a female director, producer,
validation, but in the healthy way.
In the healthy way. Yeah. I just want to be seen and noted that I am worthy as all the other men that produce in these niches. You know, they all do great work, but we need a different view.
I appreciate how comfortable I feel as a performer in front of your camera, in front of your tutelage, in front of your direction.
Thank you.
Do you feel like you get that same kind of, like, reaction for the BBW models that you work for? Do they appreciate that you're not a guy, that you bring something healthy to the table when shooting something as egregious as porn?
I'm going to be honest, it's been a mixed bag.
Really?
In the BBW community, I think because I got my start as a model, I'm sometimes seen as a peer, which of course I love everybody, and of course I'm your peer and in the industry and stuff like that. But when I'm hiring you for something, in that moment I'm not. And I have had models show up and not think they need to put in as much effort because I'm a woman, or not need to be 100% prepared. And while I strive really hard to make it as not painful as possible, or not stressful as possible, it's still a group effort. You know, a director can only work with what the models are giving. And while I do my best to put people in their strong points, it definitely has been tough in making sure that I'm being seen as someone who can create in a way that a man can. And so, yeah, it's been, but on the other side of that, it's been really nice because a lot of the models that feel like on sets with other producers can't speak up, they have no problem speaking up to me. They have no problem if there's an issue on set and they need to call cut in the middle of something important, and they do. And I work really hard to make that a reality, because when I was a model, I didn't really get that. When I worked for mainstream companies, or when I shot for mainstream companies, there were times where I wanted to cut, but I felt like I wouldn't be able to, or that I would be looked at different. I'd just get the scene over. There's 4 more minutes. Just clutch your pearls and just get through it. But I don't feel like models deserve that. And right. I try really hard to make sure that my models are comfortable enough to call a cut or use lube or tell me something about their experience after the fact. And it's worked out really well. And I'm very proud of all the models that have been able to feel comfortable on my set to do that.
That's amazing. I love to hear that. And I have just a little bit of thing to speak to that. I know that the like 10% of the niche that anything trans has to deal with outside of the mainstream pie, I know it's generally all male driven. Mm-hmm. And even with all my 17 years experience in doing this, there are still sets that I go on and it's a dude operating the camera. And I find, even me, big mouth, bigger than life, an asshole.
Yep.
I still find that I like kind of bow down to this sense of authority. I'm getting a lot better about it these days. I'm really, you know, again, 17 years. Believe me, you, to find out like something about yourself after 17 years of doing something, which is, for me, finding my self-worth, they're paying me to be on a set, they're giving me X amount of dollars, which is usually pretty substantial, and I still find that I almost cower at the dude that is operating the camera, that is essentially, quote-unquote, calling all the shots. I'm not putting my, like, sense of self-worth into that equation, you know? Yeah. I'm also there for a reason. And it's a cumulative effort. I got to be there to be in front of the camera. This guy has to be there running the camera. This PA has to be there to pick up the slack.
Yep.
And all the other things that go into it. And I still find myself, like, if just in, like, conversation before cuts, a guy says something, I try to make myself small a little bit.
Yeah.
And be accommodating. When there's no real reason for it.
You're the model. You're the one that should be accommodated.
But I say all that to say this, is that this is why I appreciate you, because you don't come with that like dominating energy that a dude does when our whole business is predicated off of what, you know, we'll just say it, the male gaze.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
We know what this is. It's so refreshing to have somebody like you making the thing happen. A person like me, a performer, gets to be on set and interact with you, and it feels so much better. Some of the most favorite shoots I've ever had has been working with you, because that whole nasty equation of the male gaze just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I actually get to feel like I'm bringing the best I can to set. I feel like I get to communicate in a way that you understand. You know, we talk back. There's communication. There's dialogue.
Now, what I get on the camera is still going to cater to the male gaze because it's absolutely gorgeous.
Well, of course. We know what the end result has to be. But working with another creative that isn't concerned with, like, you know, the male gaze.
No, especially not in the moment.
We know that we're going to get the end result. We know that we're going to open up wallets. But it's everything about being a person behind the scenes and speaking with somebody that, you know, only has your best interest in mind and you have their best interest in mind. Like, this is why you're literally one of my favorite fucking producers. You're one of my favorite directors.
Thank you.
And again, I'm going to reiterate you back to the beginning of the show. This is why I wanted to have you on so much. Because I know the audience that is listening to this podcast. I know the kids that are coming up or people that don't even, you know, they're just trans folks. They're people that are, mm-hmm. I know our audience. I want them to know that there are good people.
Yeah.
There are good people. And that's why I love so much that
there,
you're on.
There are good people in this industry. And it's contrary to what the media... mainstream media tries to say we are humans, we have hearts, and
we exist.
We exist. And there are a few of us that will die putting the comfort and safety of their models before any dollar bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've been in positions where by having a sense of ethics, I didn't get to make as much money, you know? Sometimes, you know, you gotta, it's really nice to be in this position where you get to make, like, high key, low drag money, but you gotta be a good person first, and sometimes that means you take a hit. Sometimes that means you don't make as much money.
Yeah, full transparency, I don't make as much money because I focus more on safety and quality and comfort of my models. Where, you know, I could pump and dump and make a ton of money, but I make enough to pay my bills and sometimes have some fun. But other than that, I would rather focus on people being comfortable and safe. And yeah, that cuts into how many shoots I can do in a day, how much I can get paid by doing 15 shoots a week. But I would rather have 4 safe, comfortable shoots in 1 week than do 15 where even one model felt uncomfortable.
Absolutely. And this is why we love you. We have about 8 minutes. Okay. Safely 8 minutes.
Okay.
And I think that, like, really puts us in a position where I can do this one thing. And people that are listening, they know season 3 is all about industry talk and industry interviews. What are 3 pieces of advice? And please feel free to elaborate and take your time. 3 pieces of advice that you'd give to anybody in this industry, adult writ large, whether it's trans folks or BBWs or upcoming producers, 3 pieces of advice that you'd give that you think is salient.
I think the most important one is if your heart's not in it, go home.
Please go on about that. That's amazing.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. I know we're in a position in this country where we all need to make money. We all need to pay our bills. But over the decade that I've been in the industry, I've watched people come and go. And I think we are just at a point where we have more people that are here for a dollar than their heart. And I hope that changes. And I hope that more people see that. There's enough money for everybody. There's enough room for everybody at the industry table. But if your heart's not here, then it's hard to share.
I absolutely agree. I'm going to say one little thing,
mm-hmm.
and I want to hear your 2 and your 3. But I'm going to say one little thing. I also know it's what we're talking about is very nuanced. And I know, like, some people see this industry as a way to survive.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that either.
There's nothing wrong with that either. And I know we're saying, well, make sure your heart's in the right place to do that. If you utilize this industry to make a few bucks to get yourself, you know, day to day, just get through it, you know, please feel that it's okay to back out and that you're not a failure because you didn't get to make this work and you were only utilizing it as a way to make money. That's still totally valid. You know, I don't want you to feel like a failure just because this didn't work out for you because your heart wasn't in it, you know?
Also,
do what you got to do. So many of us in this industry are disenfranchised, and if all you could get out of this industry was making a few bucks, please make the few bucks to get you to the next day. But do me one favor. Do me one favor. If it didn't work out for you, please know that you're not alone. If you feel like it's a failure that you had to get out of it, please know that there are folks like Nikki Sequoia, there are folks like me, there are folks like Stephanie Special, my usual co-host. We're easy to find on social media.
Yeah.
And you can talk to us and we can dialogue with you and we can also point you to, you know, other resources, professional resources. Because I've seen it time and time again, and I'm sure you have, where people just utilize this industry to make a quick buck. But their heart, and their heart isn't in it.
And you know what? Making a quick buck to pay your rent to make sure that, you know, you house your family, that's still heart. That's still heart. So that's, you know, you have to look at it in that way. You know, making sure your family is housed, that's heart. So just because you don't love the industry doesn't mean your heart's not in it. Like, if you're working hard to make a difference in your life, your family's life, anything like that, that's still heart, in my opinion.
Absolutely. The money that you make, even if your quote-unquote heart isn't in it to, like, do this full time, this dumb piece of, like, just making entertainment, the whole reason you did it was, one, to survive, and one, utilizing that money to not only survive, but to help you, you know, keep living to another day so that you can maybe be a part of your family or help the loved one, or it doesn't even have to be that. It could just be as simple as helping yourself.
Yeah, keeping the electric on.
As simple as that. It's all valid. And if you need any kind of help outside of that, it has nothing to do with what you could pull out of this industry outside of money. You still have friends. You still have resources.
Yep.
You're not alone, right?
Not at all.
Absolutely not. So that is one. What's the second piece of advice that you give?
Second piece of advice is don't put all your eggs in one basket. I think with OnlyFans being on the rise after the pandemic and things like that, it's really easy to create your entire sex work career on one platform. It's really easy. Especially if you already have a following on, say, social media or TikTok or Twitter, it's really easy to bring those people over to an OnlyFans. And at that point, you know, and I'm going against how I told you I joined the industry, don't necessarily quit your job until you can pay your bills. Because just because I made $700 that first night does not mean it was easy.
I'll interrupt for just a second. Pragmatically, yes, you're absolutely correct. But I think maybe, tell me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There was something in you that when you found that thing, you knew to dive all in.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was good because of how you're built, you know, nature and nurture, that did work out for you.
Yeah, it wasn't the $700 in one night that made me jump in. It was the whole idea of being creative and the whole idea of being able to run a business myself. It wasn't just, hey, I made some bucks, I can quit my job tomorrow.
Right.
It was, hey, I want to make a career out of this. Let's do it. So, yeah, just be careful putting your eggs in one basket, especially with, you know, MasterCard and Visa being a-holes and all of that. And, you know, at the time of this recording, they're being a-holes. So let's hope by the time you hear this that there's a little difference. But other than that, you never know. I've seen over the 10, you know, 12 years I've been in the industry, I've seen sites go down overnight and you lose all your money and they're never to be heard from again.
Yep.
You have no idea what's going to happen to your site tomorrow. So just don't put all your eggs in one basket. Diversify your income.
Now I'm going to say something that maybe seems a little out of sorts, I might cut this out. This might be an edit. But I think there's something about the kind of like character of a person that gets into this industry where maybe it's not so much a concern where people put all their eggs in one basket. I think maybe creative types at all, and I'm making a lot of assumptions here about people that are getting into this industry, but I think a lot of creative people are predisposed to spinning a lot of plates.
Yes.
And that, yes, absolutely, as pragmatic advice, you do not put all of your eggs in one basket. But if you want to do this, if your heart's into it, you're going to be spinning enough plates where if one guy doesn't work out, you wind up waking up and saying, I got to put all my energy into this other thing. And you wind up spinning your plates over time, and it evens out into what we call a career.
That's kind of how it happened with me.
Because there's no such thing. There's no such thing. Like, porn's not a monolith. Entertainment is not a monolith. Making money off of being a creative person is not a monolith. I used to think that way before I started and thinking, oh, well, what application do I sign to get into porn, right? It's just like it's a company you sign for, right? And then you're in porn, you get Lamborghinis. And it's not that way.
I think even more people nowadays can relate as being even a safer work content creator is now a viable career. Being a TikToker, being a YouTuber, being a Twitch streamer, all of those are viable careers at this point when they weren't when I started.
Right.
And so there's a lot more people that can relate to the amount of work that we do for ourselves or the amount that goes into building a brand for yourself. And I think that helps us a little bit in the sense that, you know, more content creators already know when they get into the OnlyFans game or they get into the porn game, they already come from having such a social media following and building their career as a content creator or a safer work platform that they understand how much work is actually going to go into it.
I want to just like put a little bit of icing on what you said, if you allow me. I think essentially what we're talking about is what has, you know, like been a boogeyman in like social media and wherever you're, you know, relating to the world through the internet, and that is the gig economy.
Yes. Right?
The gig economy.
Yeah.
And so much of porn is about being a part of the gig economy. And there are so many variables and so many factors. I said earlier in this podcast, break rules. Breaking rules is part of the gig economy. And I'm not talking about being an Uber driver. I'm not talking like, yeah, that's one thing you can do. But if you're going to make, quote unquote, a decent wage and, like, more importantly, have, like, time on your hands after you do the work, like the most valuable thing, have time on your hands.
What is that? Time on your hands after work?
What I'm saying is weirdos are going to be a part of a grand scheme of the gig economy. And you should absolutely do that, but you have to pay attention and you have to like continually spin plates. And you can, if your heart's invested in it, manipulate and being a part of the gig economy, because nothing has your best interest in mind.
No.
But there is a slightly easier way, if you can have your heart in it, to manipulate this outside force, which is kind of fucking with the gig economy.
Yes.
And then being like of sound mind about it and manipulating it as much as it manipulates you. So that being said, with my weird dumb philosophical thing out of the way, what's number three? Third piece of advice.
You can create with what's in front of you. I think it's going to be my third. When you enter the industry, you will see everybody with the newest camera. You will see everybody with the newest, I'm looking around Jamie's house, the newest camera, the newest headphones, the newest microphone, the newest computer, all of that. You can create quality product with what you have. You can create quality product with your iPhone 8. You can create anything with anything. You know, as someone who grew up in Girl Scouts, like you can literally take anything and make it something else. The world is yours.
Your voice as a creative person isn't predicated on your paintbrush. It's absolutely not.
Exactly.
It's absolutely not. the fact that you want to communicate with your fellow human beings at all is enough. You can, you know, I told it, I was on set yesterday talking to a guy on set that was shooting, a producer, a director. And we got to talking about, because it's, you know, I do this. If I hear, if I see like nerdy stuff going on, I got to talk to the nerdy guy. I saw this producer and director after the shoot, and I was like, this is a guy that's like involved with the gear.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation with him about the gear, and we came to brass tacks about it doesn't matter. Just like what you said, it doesn't matter what you use. It doesn't matter what you use. I said to him, for the past 10 years of me, 17 years in this business, past 10 years, I've been using a entry-level DSLR, Canon T3i, to shoot everything. Not only has just doing that, using that one meager piece of entry-level gear, soccer mom gear, I've used it to put a roof over my head.
Yep.
I've used it like the powers that be have chucked awards in my face. Just because I used that piece of shit gear, because I was more concerned about how can I tell a story through this thing.
Yes.
But the thing didn't matter. It was just the one thing that I had.
Yep.
And, you know, it was fine.
I still shoot pictures on entry-level Canon, and I still shoot video on my iPhone majority of the time.
Yeah.
And while, yes, I'm getting the new iPhone, but the funny thing is a lot of directors and producers probably look at the iPhone and go, ha ha ha, she'll never. But watch when I win awards.
Right.
Watch.
Right. Abso-fucking-lutely.
If Apple can create amazing videos, like a lot of the things you watch on Netflix were shot on an iPhone. Do you know
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Absolutely.
It's crazy. There's a lot of like Netflix documentaries and all that stuff is shot on an iPhone. Now, when you shoot on an iPhone, make sure you get an app that controls your white balance, because Jesus Christ, Apple, fix that. God. But other than that, you can do whatever you want. And that's the beauty of the industry, is you can do whatever you want. I've made money pulling my ear in a video. Like, come on. You can do whatever you want.
The thing about if you're the kind of person that wants to make a thing that other people see and imbibe and appreciate, if you want to like partake in that transference of information, the rules are really simple. When you're controlling audio or visuals, there's actually very simple rules. And most things that we have to our avail, it doesn't take a whole lot of extra schmutz to get something done. You need to know some basic things about light and shapes and sounds. Essentially what it is learning how to like navigate the electromagnetic spectrum. You know, it's all just like it's just waveforms. And if you can get that basic about it and learn from that point up, if you want to be somebody that shows or lets people hear things, that's all you need to know. And then whatever gear that can facilitate those facts about you being able to tell a story, which is the most important thing, then you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Yeah. It doesn't take much.
And if your heart's there, it'll be beautiful.
If your heart's there, it'll be beautiful. And God damn it, I got to end on that, motherfucker. If your heart's in it, it will be beautiful. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Fucking A.
Here I am. This is the only podcast you'll probably ever hear me on.
All right. Let's say goodbye to the folks. There's your camera. There's my camera. God damn it. Everybody, thank you so much for listening and watching the Apocalypse. I can't even say the name of the show.
The Approximate Podcast?
The Approximate Podcast. Jesus Christ. You're amazing.
You got this. You're amazing. Thank you so much.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.